first lecture of the day is about something that I have found personally extremely useful, both as personal growth as well as in business, which is the art and science of counseling and coaching, and specifically with hypnotists. Anybody here a hypnotherapist or certified hypnotherapist? Good, about half of you. And if you're not, it's always an interesting and excellent tool to add to your tool belt for many, many reasons, if not just to help your friends overcome their stuff. So today we've got one of, in my opinion, one of America's top hypnotherapists, as well as especially in the Texas region. So here's a brief introduction. I'll just let her jump on stage. Her name is Deborah Faith Rose. She successfully had a hypnosis practice here in the Dallas, Texas area for the last 5 years, helping people overcome all kinds of interpersonal issues as well as just making their life better. She began using handwriting analysis 2 years ago through the Handwriting University program. She's learned it and she's used it in many ways to help her become a better therapist. She's the only National Guild of Hypnotists certified instructor in the state of Texas. And in August, Deborah and I are actually going to a hypnosis conference to co-present a lecture on how to use handwriting analysis in the field of hypnotists at one of the largest guilds, which is called the National Guild of Hypnosis Convention in Massachusetts. We're also co-authoring a series of CDs on hypnosis and handwriting and how they correlate together. So even if you're not sure like how hypnosis or NLP or some of these tools really fit into your tool belt, I think after this lecture you'll see exactly why it could fit into your tool belt and how you could benefit from some of this stuff. So please welcome Deborah Faith Rose.
Thank you, Bart. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Welcome to the last day. It's a little bit sad. And you know, when I found out that I was going to be the speaker on Sunday morning on the last day, my first thought was, oh no, the last day. They will have already learned so much. And so many great speakers. Will there be anything left that's brand new? Any new experience? Any new knowledge that I can share with them? And then last weekend, on Father's Day, I had that question answered for me. Because last weekend, I went to see my dad for Father's Day. And my dad lives in the little town of Crockett, Texas. If you're not from here, Crockett, Texas is way in the little piney woods, deep in East Texas, deep in the piney woods. And so I didn't think it was going to be anything different, just a regular visit to see my dad for Father's Day, not learn anything new, not really experience anything new, just have a nice visit. So on Father's Day morning, we got up on Sunday morning to have a nice walk through the piney woods. We were walking along. He was very quiet, as usual. Then all of a sudden, he said, stop. Stop right there. Okay? He's looking over there. See it on that big white rock? I saw it all right. It was a long brown snake just stretched out over that white rock. He said, I know you like to experience new things. Have you ever experienced picking up a snake before? In my panic, I said, no, Dad, but I should have known what was coming. And he said three words I'll never forget. Well, here's your chance. And he began to tell me how to go over there and do it as if I were really going to do it. He said, well, you walk over there, get right up to it, then you get real still for a moment. You keep your eyes on the target, and then you dash your arm out and pick it up right behind the head as fast as lightning. He thought I was really going to do it. And then he did something that any true East Texas country girl cannot ignore. He double dog dared me. I walked right over there, stood there for a moment, got my target in my eye, dashed my arms up, picked it up right between the head, and I stood there. Holding it way out there. It's hanging way down there. I was elated at what I'd done. Couldn't believe it. Then, reality set in. And I dropped it and ran. I mean, later when he caught up with me back at his house, I was relaxing on the couch feeling like crocodile hunter on animal, like thinking about my accomplishment. He went over to his desk calmly, as he always is, got out an encyclopedia, and was looking through it. And I said, Dad, Why are you looking at that encyclopedia? Well, I'm trying to find out what kind of snake you were holding. Now, see, I learned from that that this weekend I will have something new to share with you. That I've learned that regardless of where I'm at or when it is, we can all have new experiences. We can all learn new things. And I learned also to never trust anybody that tells you to pick up a snake. Yes. And if anyone says those three words, here's your chance, run like crazy. So here is your chance today to learn something of how I, nobody run, of how I use handwriting in my hypnosis practice. And I realize that everyone in here is not a hypnotist or a therapist or a counselor. But then, so my presentation is going to be in two parts. First, I'm going to show you how I use it with hypnosis. And then I'm going to turn it around to the flip side of that, which is how can you, as handwriting analysis, professional handwriting analysis, use hypnosis in that area or whatever profession that you're in. So, and what, like Bart was saying in the introduction, that I realize a big difference. The 2 years that I began to use handwriting with my clients, I noticed that their success rate was much faster, much easier. And I always had good success rate with hypnosis because hypnosis is powerful. But it's just so great when it started to work easier. When they came in to get rid of weight, it began to drop off quicker. And you'll find out why in a few moments. But first I want you to I'm just going to go chronologically through the forms, or a session, as if you were going through a hypnosis session with me, chronologically, what I do and how I use it. It's kind of like Bob was saying yesterday, you have to go step by step chronologically. So first of all, just kind of look at the forms that's on page 130, 131, 132, and 133. I want you to look at those forms, those four, and just decide what you think yourself would be the number one most important form. Above all else, if they didn't bring or fill out any of them except for one, what do you think it would be? What would be the most important one? The future vision is the most important because I'm going to have a sample of their handwriting, and guess what else? I'm getting them, by writing it, to see them how they want to see themselves. If they're coming in to lose weight or stop smoking, I'm going to get them to project their mind and imagination and thoughts already out into the future and say, this is how it should be. This is how I want to see myself. In great detail. What will you be wearing? What size will you be? See yourself as a clean, non-smoker, running or exercising, more energy, whatever it is. They get to start. And plus, I get the handwriting sample. So it serves two purposes. So above all else, that's the most important.
It plants it in their mind.
Yes. Absolutely. Now, the release form, just to tell you a little bit about that, that's optional. If they don't want to sign that, if they're uncomfortable, they don't have to. Even if they do, then I feel comfortable with sharing some of their handwriting samples, even though I never use a person's full name. But if they don't, I don't share anything about their, even if I don't have their name on there. Now, here's an important tip, though, something that you may not, and at first I didn't think about it until I started using handwriting analysis quite frequently in my sessions. I would begin to talk about and make some suggestions for changes during the initial part of the interview, even before I took them into the state of hypnosis. And then I began to realize, it would be more powerful if I just looked at their handwriting, got an idea of some techniques that I need to use by their personality, but don't say a word yet. About, like, raise your T-bar, do this, or take the loops out of your D's. Not yet. Here's why. Because all I do during the initial session, I build rapport. We talk about their future vision of themselves. And I do tell them a little bit of why I told them to write it out in cursive handwriting. So we talk about it in a fun way. But I don't yet give them any suggestions. Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to begin to sprinkle those suggestions for changing their handwriting throughout the actual hypnosis session while they're in the state of hypnosis when I'm talking to their subconscious mind. I want their subconscious mind to be the very first mind to hear that. Now, just to let you know, when I'm talking about mind as if there are several minds, I'll kind of insert right here a little definition of what hypnosis is and what it isn't. It's not like going to sleep. You don't go to sleep. Your conscious mind is aware and your subconscious mind is aware. But like right now, your subconscious mind is sitting there in the background. Your conscious mind is out front. Your conscious mind is the critical one. It takes in all of the information. Your subconscious mind is the most powerful, and yet it's really the lazy. It's like your subconscious mind is lazy. It doesn't go out and seek information like your conscious mind does. It sits back there and says to itself, well, I'll do something with information if you'll give it to me, but I'm not going to go out and seek it. And your conscious mind, your subconscious mind does not analyze at all. It's not logical at all. It's purely emotional. It's non-judgmental. So you see, if I were to tell them, well, raise your T-bar, take the loops out of your D's, all this stuff, and they're not really quite into this handwriting stuff yet, or even hypnosis, their conscious mind is going to be out there in front starting to criticize, starting to judge. Oh, what's she telling me? That's not going to help me to stop smoking. That's going to help me lose weight, changing my D's and T's. Is she crazy? So see, the conscious mind is going to start all these questions and all these criticism and judgments. But if I wait, hold back a little bit, let the subconscious mind move to the front in the state of hypnosis, then the subconscious mind is not judgmental at all. It's just kind of lazy that way. It goes, I don't want to judge. It's too much work. No, just tell me what to do, and I'll do it. So it's going to be out there going, okay, you want me to raise my T-bar? Fine. If it'll help, I'll do that. So that's why I wait. Now, in a few moments, I want you to experience a little bit of how I interweave some words about their handwriting actually in the state of hypnosis. But it kind of reminded me, though, yesterday when Kurt was talking about belief, the power of belief. And someone said, because remember yesterday when Kurt was saying he wanted to find out why some people were successful and some people were not? And I think somebody said it has something to do with willpower. And that's a little bit true, but not completely, because willpower is only in your conscious mind. Anything in your conscious mind is temporary. Always remember that, above all else, about your conscious mind. It's temporary. Any memory, anything, it's going to fly right out. Your conscious mind is meant to be temporary. So willpower lives where? In your conscious mind. So guess what? Willpower is meant to be temporary. There's no such thing as somebody having a weaker willpower or a stronger willpower than anyone else. So don't ever beat yourself up and think, oh gosh, I can't do this or that, I just have a weak willpower. There's no such thing. The only thing different that other people have, just like Kurt talked about, people who are successful, they go into their subconscious mind, the belief. Belief is an emotion. Emotions live in your subconscious mind only. Subconscious mind only. Your conscious mind doesn't want to have a thing to do with emotions. They're only in your subconscious mind. So just like Kurt said yesterday, the people who are successful, they have the belief. The belief is emotional. Emotions are in your subconscious mind. Therefore, now can you imagine how powerful hypnosis is and why I wait to talk about the handwriting changes? Because I want to talk to the subconscious mind. The one with emotions are the one with the belief, the one that's the most powerful. And what I want to do, just to kind of go through, still in the interview, I'm still interviewing the client, and I look at some of the, I wrote down just some of the letters that I look at first, because in my business, I don't go into depth and sit there for hours or and with a magnifying glass or anything like that, like some of the advanced things that we learn in here. And I want to learn that, and I'm learning that, because if I ever need to take a handwriting home and be more prepared for their second session, I do that. But on the initial session, I have to have a quick overview, quick. And so these are just some of the letters that I wrote down on the handout, the T, the Y, the K, the G, the M, and the D. I look for those because I want to know, for example, if they're stubborn. I want to know if they're going to be resistant to change. If they where that tells me what kind of induction to use, what kind of hypnotic induction, how do I get them to the hypnosis state. And some people, if they're very controlled or in a profession that's very controlled, I'm going to need to use a different induction rather than just a relaxing voice, go to your happy place. Because they're going to go, what? You know, this is not going to work. So I have to have a whole bag of tricks for different personalities. And I used to have to interview them for a long time to get all that information. But now with the handwriting, see, I have to, you, in the past, before I started studying handwriting, I used to have to get that verbally from them, to kind of drag it out of them, to find out their personality, to decide what kind of induction to use. But now, regardless of what they tell me, I just look at their handwriting and go with it. So here's an example, just to tell you a little story. One day, I had a fellow come in, and he's just over 6 foot tall, big football-looking guy, you know, huge guy. He walks in, he's got a gun strapped to his side. Walks in, he goes, I want you to make me stop smoking. Yes, sir, I will. So I had him to do his, give me his handwriting sample, and guess what? His T-bars were concave, shows what, self-control. They were slanting down to the right, a dominant, take-charge person. Sharp pointed humps on the M's, cumulative quick thinker, and almost every D and T had the TP for showing stubbornness. And he was an AB writer, which means he's ruled by logic and judgment. And you know what? Good for him, because if he were not that kind of a person, he could be dead. Because you know what his profession was? You may have already guessed. He's a Dallas police force, a member of the SWAT team. So every minute of his working hours, he has to be on guard, in control. And for me to sit, if I were to sit him down and say, okay, close your eyes and go to your happy place. Is that going to work for him? No. He's going to laugh and walk out. Now, as a hypnotist, most of the times we use that the most, a relaxation technique, because it's pleasant. And for most people, it works. But sometimes you have people that you just know it's not going to work for you. You've got to do something quick. Now, if you're not a hypnotist, we have what we call quick inductions, which deals with shocking the critical factor of your conscious mind, like your conscious mind is out here up front, and all of a sudden you say something that shocks it, and your conscious mind can't handle it, and it jumps over to the side. It just goes, oh, I can't handle that. I want to jump over to the side and let the subconscious mind be up front. And instantly, they're in a state of hypnosis. Now, here's the tricky part. To get to a person to that point, you got to do something that is against my nature. Now, Roland over here, I just made that remark. He's one of my top graduates from my last certification course I had. Now, he doesn't even know this story. I'm going to reveal something and confess something for the first time. For the first 3 years of my hypnosis practice, I knew I had all the knowledge of all the quick, shocking inductions. And what I mean by that is there's somewhere you kind of, one is where you hold up the hand and they look at it and you talk real relaxing and soft voice, and all of a sudden, before they even know what you're doing, you yell at the word, shut! And that is against my nature, especially with a man wearing a gun. I was taught not to yell at people with guns. So thank goodness that man came in right after, though, my first handwriting conference. Because I began to raise my own T-bars. Because before that, my whole first 3 years of practice, I never used quick inductions, even if I thought that that's what they needed. I never did. I couldn't bring myself to it. Every time I started to use one of the techniques I knew that would work, I would freeze up. My confidence level didn't think that I could yell at someone like that. But thank goodness that man came in after I learned to raise my own T-bars and had already been doing that. So I thought, you know, I can do this. Then after I used it myself, used the own techniques I learned on myself, thank goodness, thank you, Bart. Because I went over to that man. He's laying in the chair, and I picked up his hand, was telling him these things, and just going on talking before he even realized, why did I yell out, Satan? And his eyes just kind of fluttered like that, like, I can't believe she yelled at me. And then I just went down, went close, and then he was just down. So thank you, Bart. Oh my gosh. And he did stop smoking. Thank you. Now, one of the other things, and you know, someone's coming in for weight management, and they're not into physical activity at all. I'm going to look at those, if they have a big loop on the pee or not. And what if they don't? Then what if they their wives don't even have a loop at all? They're not into, that's going to show me they're not into any physical activity. They know they need to consciously, but they don't like it. They're just not physical. They're not imaginative in any physical way. When I think of a why, I think about my husband. Wait, now let me explain. See, the other day, I was in the den, and he said, Deborah, do we have any tomatoes? And I said, sure. There are a couple laying on the kitchen counter. He went in there, he looked, came back in the den, said, there's not a couple laying on the counter, there's three. And I said, well, yeah, I know, but let me explain to you. When I say couple, that means a few. Anywhere between two and seven is a couple to me. And in this case, it meant three. So he said, he thought of me, and he said, oh, I understand. So when you say that you and I are a couple, that could really mean three. So he got a big smile on his face, and you should see his wives. Triangle City. Edit this out, but that's not going to matter for me. I'm already dead because there's a lady in here that works with my husband. So it's like the Las Vegas thing. What is said in this room? I hope stays in this room. If not, somebody be showing up at your door with bags. So, you know, when I look at the M too, I know that if a person has those pointy M's, that they're going to be that comprehensive thinker. But a person with the rounded M's, they're going to be just great with that progressive relaxation. They're just going to love that. So that's an example of how I use that as an induction technique. And then I'm going to also use their hand to decide what actual things I'm going to say to them while they're in the state of hypnosis. And let me just share another examples of one of my cases with you too is... Does anyone in here know what trichotillomania is?
What is it?
It's compulsive pulling your hair out. Here's an example of during the last 2 years when I started using the handwriting analysis, I've seen 12 cases of that. Where it's just that now this is what I found about the trichotillomania cases. Their handwriting shows extreme perfectionism. Extreme. It's got their T's. Their I's and J's are dotted exactly perfectly. You could put a ruler under their handwriting. It's just straight. And when they're on a blank piece of paper, it's beautifully. They write the letters as we learn them in school. All 12 of them. But I didn't feel like that's enough to really make a true statement. Say that all trichotillomania cases are going to be extreme perfectionists. Maybe by this time next year, when I have a little more, then I can say that. But I'm just going to share that with you, that's what I found with these 12 people. And because here's what happens is, see, your subconscious mind, remember this about your subconscious mind, the most important job of your subconscious mind is to protect you. Above all else, that's what it wants to do. So with these trichotillomania people that are so obsessed with being perfect, they cannot control the world outside of them, so that gets them frustrated, highly agitated. So their subconscious mind is freaking out, saying, I'm not doing my job. I'm not making her happy. I'm not making them feel good because they're frustrated. They can't make things perfect. So, well, if they can't make things perfect around them, what can they control and make perfect? Something about themselves, they can at least control that. Oh, yeah, hair. So every eyelash must be perfect. Every hair must be perfect. Every hair on their head must be perfect. And if they even the slightest one out of alignment, guess what? It's out of there. It's history. So that way, on a subconscious level, the subconscious mind is relaxed then when they're doing it. It's a subconscious thing because it's almost this feeling of deep satisfaction because their subconscious mind is saying, oh, good, now I'm doing my job. I'm letting her be in control of something that she can be in control of. And it's a deep sense of satisfaction. And so that, when I see someone, even though I know what they're coming in for, I know they're coming in for the trichotillomania, I can just confirm to what degrees their perfectionism is. Now, I want to tell you something that's very interesting, too, that regression. Because I tell you what reminded me of it is yesterday hearing Teresa's talk about health and hypnosis. Health and handwriting. She talked about remember the Seagram's drinking chart where you could, somebody could drink something and then you do their handwriting, looks different. Drink, have another drink, then it looks worse and worse. So regression, now this is something that's really exciting to me that I have just begun to use. I've only done it one time, so I didn't feel like that I knew enough about it to talk about it on the teleseminar that we had earlier, but and I don't have a sample of it for you, but I'll tell you why it's exciting, because I've tried it this one time, and a person needed to be regressed back for something that they felt like happened in their childhood they wasn't sure. When I'm talking about regression, I'm not talking about past life. I'm talking about back to an initial event of something that's causing them a problem, and they don't know what it is. So, as Roland over here knows, he's in stage hypnotist, that you don't have to have your eyes closed to be in hypnosis. Like if you've ever seen a stage show, the hypnotist, you close your eyes and you open your eyes and you're still hypnotized and you're going to get up, walk around the stage and do goofy things. You know, you can be hypnotized with your eyes open. You can talk, you can do things and still be hypnotized. So using that same technique in a clinical setting, I would take the person. Now, here's something, a question that someone asked me on the teleseminar, though. And they said, well, how do you know how far to go back in a person's history and that initial event that's causing the problem? How do you know when that's it? That's the one. Or how do you know when to stop and keep going back and going back? Well, here's how you tell. It's kind of like the Seagram's thing. So think of it like a clothes closet. You're going in your clothes closet and you see something right in front. Oh, yeah, I remember that. I wore that yesterday. You go along, push them along. Okay. Oh, yeah, I wore that last month. Oh, yeah, I wore that 6 months ago. And you're still remembering. What? You're still remembering the clothes. You go all the way back to the back and you find this last suit or dress thing back there. You go, whoa, I had forgotten about that. I forgot all about I had still had that. That's the initial cause. When you're going along and you're asking the client and they're in hypnosis and you say, where are you now? What are you feeling? What do you remember this event? Yeah, I remember it. And it's very normal that they just automatically say yes, they remember it. And then you're going back again and again, just like in the closet. Then you can tell by in their voice and just the expression on their face that they're remembering it as if they're remembering it for the first time. So remembering it easily is different than like being surprised, like, oh, I'd forgotten about that. That's the initial cause. So when I get to that point, I stop. I say, 1, 2, and 3, you're going to open your eyes. I have a blank piece of paper right there with me and say, now. And I have them write down some sentence like, still in the state of hypnosis, take your silly monkey back to the zoo. I don't have them write down anything about what they're experiencing in the past or anything. Just something that's non-related at all, because I don't want to overemphasize, especially if it's a bad event. And then I say, 1, 2, 3, close your eyes, you're right back at the event. I bring them forward. And then, 1, 2, 3, open your eyes, write that same sentence again. Now they're moving back up into the present. So you start with back in time with the initial event, then we're moving back up to the present. And each time where I stop, they're getting moving closer to the present. They write it down again. Now, this is a time when I don't analyze that right at that session. I'm going to take it home and analyze it, and I'm going to see, for example, the one time that I've done it, it was very amazing. because the lady did not even remember that she had been raped by her babysitter. And you could see her handwriting before that. We went back before even that happened, and it was a very vivacious, like the teenager, big writing. And it, I guess you would say she was probably like a CD. And then, guess what? Suddenly it went to like almost an FA at that event. And then as the years pass, I see the other samples, it starts coming back a little bit to the A, B, straight up and down to where it is present. So you can see the change. It's almost as if it's a different person. And so that is really amazing to me. And then maybe by this time next year, I'll have some samples of that to show you. I've only done it that one time. I just wanted to share that with you because that's an amazing thing where you can see the different handwritings going through people's lives. Yeah.
So then when you brought her back out of hypnosis, did her conscious mind then remember that either?
Yes. Yes, because then at that point, then we talked about it, and she goes, it's kind of like the closet thing. When she went back there, it was like, wow. She said, I had just put that so far back there that I just forgotten about it. And she hadn't really forgotten, as if she has amnesia about it. Yeah, but she remembered, yeah, consciously. Now, well, I want you to experience how I actually interweave suggestions for change in handwriting throughout my hypnosis session. We're not going to go through, I'm not going to put you all into a state of hypnosis. That's not the point. The intent is not to hypnotize you, but here's why I ask you to close your eyes. Did you know that when your eyes are open, that one third of your brain is engaged constantly in interpreting what you're seeing? So, I mean, that means that one third of your brain is busy analyzing, criticizing, and being judgmental, and that leaves only two-thirds to focus on what you're trying to learn. Now, I don't know if you're like me, I need my whole brain and then some. So when I'm trying to learn something, I can open my eyes. So y'all want to experience that?
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about, just to let you know some of the pattern that I'm going to talk about in the word, just is about eating healthy and ego strengthening. Is anybody opposed to that?
No.
And I had to ask because Roland over here, my graduate, and I'll never forget on my first day class, I said, I'm going to end this class with a group hypnosis session just to show you what it's like. And he got this worried look on his face. Then he raised his hand with a question. And he said, are you going to tell me that I'm never again going to like Mexican food? So, Roland, I ask you, do you still like Mexican food?
Where do you think?
So there's nothing to worry about. So everybody get comfortable. Kind of push your chair back from the table if you need to. And put your feet flat on the floor. Make sure your legs are uncrossed. Now, begin to just breathe in deeply and let it out slowly. And close your eyes. Now close your eyes now. And begin to breathe in deeply and focus only on your breathing now. Remember, this is just so that you can actually consciously hear how I interweave it, the words in and out. So begin to focus only on how important your body is to your life on earth. How important is it really? Mentally ask yourself that question. Without your physical body, where and how would you live on earth? As you easily make healthy food choices, you realize that healthy food is so good to your taste buds and so packed with nutrition that it takes only a small amount to fill you up and give you that satisfied feeling. Eating small amounts of food is just as normal and natural to you as taking your tea bar to the top. As you take your tea bar to the top higher and higher, you feel your confidence filling you up from the bottom of your feet to the top of your head. It's so natural and normal for you to take your tea bar to the top. Every thought, every emotion, every action, every cell in your body is saturated with confidence. So high to the top of that tea bar, you have raised the bar. You have raised the standard of your own life. Becoming the person you were born to be by taking your tea bar to the top, you have set an example for all of us. have raised the bar, raised the standard. It's a noble and honorable thing you've done here today. And thank you for showing us all how successful, truly successful life is at the top of that tea bar. Now, right here today, you've begun a new journey. A journey filled with adventure and excitement and success. And in a few moments, I'll count up from 1 to 5. As I do, you'll visualize and feel the tea bar rising higher and higher. And as the bar rises, your confidence rises. And as your confidence rises, your excitement rises. And you're ready to make a difference in your life and in the world. 1, thank you for setting an example. 2, ready for a new journey and a new life. 3, you feel the success, the empowerment. It's almost as if you yourself were right at the top of that tee. 4, everything you've learned here this weekend from all the speakers will enhance your life in a brand new positive way. 5, you can open your eyes feeling confident and successful. Take a deep breath in. And this is the time that I continue positive suggestions, because right now, as the client is coming out of hypnosis, their conscious mind is still moving to the front. I continue to talk about what I've talked about and changing their handwriting. Because as their conscious mind begins to become more aware, they're still in a highly suggestible state. You'll see, that was just a little mini relaxation, not going into hypnosis, but showing you, did you see how I talked about food and how it relates to confidence and their success of their sessions by raising their tea bar, just interwoven it in and out of the session itself. Does everyone feel refreshed?
Yes.
So you can kind of, does that give a good example of how I use it? It's so early, I didn't want anybody to go to sleep if I did it too long. So now I want to do the approach that I talked about, from the approach of how you can actually use hypnosis. Because a lot of people use this. A lot of people use something called waking hypnosis. Waking hypnosis. Salespeople use it. Doctors use it. What?
Preachers.
Preachers use it. Yes. Attorneys use it. And guess what? I just use it.
Spouses.
So a good way, though, to show you the difference between how in a waking state that we flip back and forth from using our subconscious mind and our conscious mind, is to ask for a volunteer to come up here and say their ABCs as fast as possible. 1, 2, 3, go.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z.
Whoa. 3 seconds. You know why she did it so fast? It was a subconscious function. But now I'm going to let all of you do it together as an audience. Not backwards. That's what you thought. Oh, I can do backwards too. But I want you to say the ABCs, and you should be able to do it in like 1 second, because I'm only going to ask you to say every other letter. Every other letter. A, C, okay, when I, so she did it in 3 seconds, so you're saying just every other letter. You should be able to do it in like a half a second. So on the count of 3, everybody do that. 1, 2, 3. Gina's still one, and she did the whole thing. And you know why? Because you were doing it, you had to stop and think about it. It was conscious then. So you just experienced, when she was up here doing that, she was in a state of waking hypnosis. Because she was doing something from the subconscious mind, a subconscious level, while she was still awake. Got to say hypnosis. So a lot of, if you see on your handout, it says alliteration. That just means repetition. It's repetition of initial consonant sounds, such as just simply saying, instead of saying raise your T-bar, that's why I say take your T-bar to the top, because I'm focusing on the T's. And that may seem very simple, But your subconscious mind is very simple. It likes rhythm. It likes rhythm and rhyme. Taking your T-bars to the top, it lets it sink into your subconscious mind even stronger. And yeah, let's go back up to where it says presupposition, though. Presupposition just means to suppose that a statement is a logical fact. And it's very powerful if you say, even if you're talking to someone, regardless of what business you're in, you're using wake-up hypnosis if you use this phraseology. As you do something, you will then do this. So, for example, as you carry your Y loop up through the baseline, you lose the fear of success. Another example is the more you do something, the more you will do this. The more you change your handwriting, the more you will change your life. You can use this in any profession. Just fill in the blank for whatever profession you're in. It's a powerful way to get things into your person's subconscious mind. And then when you do something, you will do this. When you retrace your lowercase d, you will handle criticism in a positive way. And I use the handwriting in this, which is what we're studying, but you can also use it in any part of your life. Now, anaphora, if I'm saying that right, that is the repetition of a word or phrase at the beginning of a successive sentence. And then you have another one, and I really have to say this very quickly or pronounce it apostrophe, epistrophe. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but that's just repetition of words or phrases at the end of successive sentences. So the following example that I wrote down, it's using where it says, when you take your T-bar to the top, you believe in your own ability to succeed. When you take your T-bar to the top, you feel confidence making you stronger. When you take your T-bar to the top, you reach your goal in an easier, quicker way. There are three hypnotic phrases, techniques used in those three sentences. There are three. Look at those sentences for a few moments and decide which three that it is. Now, does anyone want to say what all three? Oh, okay.
Presupposition, alliteration, and anaphora.
Yes. Those three sentences, it's using first the presupposition of like when you do something, then this will happen to you. And then you've got the alliteration of take the T-bar to the top. And then you've got the anaphora of like when you do this, you know, the same words at the beginning of consecutive sentences. When I was telling you earlier that about waking hypnosis, and I said doctors use it, attorneys use it, advertisers use it, and I just used it, what technique was that? Who said epistrophe second? Look at your handout with the handwriting samples on it. The very first one where it looks like this. You should take your silly monkey and go back to the zoo, and it's written down like that. See, this told me a lot about what kind of induction to use. It tells me this person is going to be, what I saw right off were the K's. The K's, I'm going to need something aggressive. I need something aggressive, the large K's. And I saw that they're not a real happy person at all. This was a 13-year-old boy that had been kicked out of school, and my sessions were his last hope to not be sent to juvenile justice school. So you can see that it was all in the mundane, live for the moment, sometimes like children do of that age, and pretty much no highs or lows, just right in the middle type of writing. And so that tell me a lot about what direction I'm going to use with him. He's very rebellious. That's why he got kicked out of school. You can see that in the case. But now look at the one that where it says your future, behind that, your future vision of yourself, and where it starts off, I picture myself getting on a plane. When I had to leave here Friday a little early because I had an emergency session, they needed to fly out Saturday morning for a business trip, and they had a fear of flying, so much so that it was going to keep them from going on that business trip, and they could get fired, they needed to be there. So he wrote this. And I saw immediately that he's a little bit sad about something. He's depressed. to see how the bass line's going down. And then I saw the loops and the D's. And then I saw the Y's are going down. Now, as I talked to him, I found out that he's very successful in his business, of what he does, his profession. So why does he have fear of success? And what's he sad about? So then as he talked, and I began to realize, he started saying the other day, or he said, last month I was flying somewhere, and it was so embarrassing. I had to be taken off, and he's out, taken off that plane, almost carried off. He went into a full-blown panic attack. But he's this big 6-foot-tall guy. He said, it's very embarrassing for me. Here I am, this big 6-foot-tall guy, successful, and this was his own words. Then I just break down and have to be carried off a plane. He said, it's just making me depressed. He actually said those words, but I already saw this. I knew that he was, even if he hadn't told me that. Now, just to look real quickly at the next one, the next future vision. I circled some things that about this person, this is for a weight management program. And I knew right away that I could use a progressive relaxation with this lady, because there's no large K's, or there's nothing that shows argumentative. She's not going to be talkative, because the O's and A's are closed. Now, this is very important as a hypnotist, because also I want, if I know somebody's going to be very talkative and all of their A's are open, that tells me that I need to stay in control of the conversation, because I may have people backed up in the waiting room. and I need to, they can't take 2-3 hours when their session is an hour and a half. So I know right away, uh-oh, there's a talker. So that helps me. So I knew that she's not going to be a talker, but she is open. You see the fluidity? She's got fluidity and some figure eights going on there. The things that I asked her to change in the first session, though, is to raise her T-bar and to close the loop in the T and the D. But see, then that's going to help the success of her session. Now, if she had had some teepees, which she didn't, but that's the kind of person that I'll begin to tell them, like you said, to retrace that T, because if they're going to be stubborn about what I'm telling them, it's going to take longer sessions for them to get the success. But if we get rid of that stubbornness up front, then okay, the stubbornness is gone, success comes quicker. That's what I mean about the success coming quicker. Now, the last one is kind of a bonus, because in the very beginning when I started working on my certification course, it said that even if you took, the handwriting comes from your brain, and even if you took away the ability to write with your hand, that you wrote with your feet, you'd still have the same basic strokes. And so I had a lady in the office about a month ago, and we were talking about handwriting. She was having fun. She said, oh, when I was in school, I could write backwards. And I thought she meant backwards slant. She goes, no, just like looking in a mirror. And I said, really? Can you do it now? Because I wanted to see if she still had, see in the top part, writing regular, she has that turned down Y for fear of success. And look down there. There it is again, writing backwards. Even when she was had to think about it a little bit consciously, that fear of success came out subconsciously even. See that in the word silly when she wrote backwards? Still it is. There's that turn down Y. Does anyone have any questions? But I'll tell you something, and something to remember, that Albert Einstein knew the difference between the subconscious and conscious mind. He called the subconscious mind our intuitive mind, and our conscious mind the servant. Now, this is what he said. Albert Einstein said, the intuitive mind is a sacred gift. The rational mind is the faithful servant. We've created a society which honors the servant and forgets about the gift. So my challenge to you is, use your servant, but always remember your gift. And if right now, after all you've already heard this weekend, all these great speakers, if you're still sitting there, still wondering whether you're going to take this to the next level, still wondering whether or not to take this opportunity of profession of handwriting and go all the way with it, if you're still undecided about whether to go back there and take some of that knowledge home with you and go further with it, gosh, if you still don't know, if you're still trying to decide, all I can say to you is, I double dog dare you.